Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q2 FY 2024 earnings conference call of Zensar Technologies Limited, hosted by Motilal Oswal Financial Services Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Pritesh Thakkar from Motilal Oswal Financial Services Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Everyone, on behalf of Motilal Oswal, I welcome you all to Zensar Technologies call. We have Mr. Manish Tandon, CEO and Managing Director of Zensar Tech, Mr. Sachin Zute, Chief Financial Officer, and a few other members of the senior management team. Before I hand over the call to Manish, I would like to highlight that the safe harbor statement of the second slide of the earnings presentation is assumed to be read and understood. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Pritesh. Hello, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Thank you for taking the time to join us today to discuss Zensar's financial results for the second quarter of financial year 2024. With me on this call are a few distinguished colleagues, Vijay Sinha, Chief Operating Officer, Sachin Zute, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Vivek Ranjan, Chief CHRO. Our Q2 performance shows continued strength and demand for our service lines, particularly around experience services, advanced engineering, data engineering, and analytics. Q2 revenue crossed 150 million, a sequential quarter-on-quarter growth of 0.6%. Our PAT registered a sequential quarter-on-quarter growth of 130 basis points and year-over-year growth of 940 basis points. Earnings per share saw a growth of 11.3% quarter-on-quarter. Let me walk you through the high-level performance of our geographies and verticals for this quarter. The Europe and South Africa region has shown good growth momentum on account of our service line diversification and new wins across long-standing and new clients. We saw a decline in US region due to project closures in a few key customers. On the vertical front, I would also like to take this opportunity to update that we will start tracking healthcare and life sciences as a separate vertical. In the last four quarters, we have identified certain key strength areas, healthcare being one of them. We see a long-term potential in healthcare and have already identified leadership around it. It is an existing business for us, and we have realigned our verticals to that effect. Apart from this, we have also realigned our other verticals in line with our leadership structure. Coming to the sequential QOQ constant currency growth for the verticals, our services revenue in banking and financial services grew by 3%, manufacturing and consumer services grew by 6.7%, while high-tech declined by 8.3% and healthcare and life sciences saw a decline of 1.7%. I am pleased to share that for the second quarter, our last 12 months attrition declined to 13.1%, a sequential improvement of 280 basis points. This quarter, we gave salary increases, which were better than the industry average and has been very well received by our associates across all levels. With that, I will now invite Sachin Zute, our Chief Financial Officer, to provide an update on some critical financial data.
Thank you, Manish. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining the call today. In addition to Manish talking about business, I will take you through some of the key financial metrics for the quarter ending September 23. The revenue for the second quarter of FY 24 stood at $150.2 million in US dollar terms, reflecting growth of 0.6% sequentially in reported terms and 0.2% in constant currency terms. Gross margin for the quarter stood at 31.8%, decrease of 180 basis points quarter-on-quarter. Decline was primarily due to wage hike impact of 190 basis points, reversal of one-time benefit of 80 basis points, which was mentioned in last quarter's earnings call. It was partially offset by the exchange gain of 30 basis points and utilization benefit of 50 basis points. SG&A has improved by 170 basis points. It had impact of 30 basis points. Wage hike had impact of 30 basis points on SG&A, which was compensated by a reduction in discretionary spend. Further, during the quarter, we had finalized our annual management bonus of FY23, which had a one-time positive impact of 160 basis points on SG&A. Normalized SG&A has remained flat quarter-on-quarter basis. EBITDA for the quarter was at 18.6%, lower by 10 basis points against last quarter. Net of one-timer, EBITDA would have been close to 17%. After Q2 of last fiscal, we have consistently improved our EBITDA margins. This was a result of rigorous efforts driven across the organization, which involved several tracks, including improving commercials, focus on services revenue, optimization of subcon, improving utilization, control on attrition, reducing talent acquisition cost, resulting in a YOY improvement of approximately 10 percentage points on EBITDA. These measures have enabled us to make investments into focused areas of business. Our objective continues to maintain margins at mid-teens trajectory for the financial year, despite current demand softness. LTM attrition levels have shown continuous improvement over the quarter and stood at 13.1% for Q2 FY24. DSO for the quarter stood at 79 days. For the quarter ended, cash and cash equivalents, including investment, stood at $227.1 million, 6.7 million decrease from last quarter. Quarter-on-quarter decline is due to advance tax payment, dividend payout and annual bonus payout of FY23 in Q2 FY24. Order book was 194.8 million for the current quarter. This also includes some spillover from previous quarter and certain renewals which closed earlier in this quarter itself. Effective tax rate for the quarter is 22.7%, an improvement of 300 basis points quarter on quarter. ETR improved due to credits received at foreign location during the quarter, part of which are expected to continue for balance of the year. Total amount of outstanding hedges as on September 30, 2023 was equivalent to $289.1 million against $246.7 million in Q2 FY24. On ESG front, as of Q2 FY24, we have taken specific initiatives to increase green energy component and reduce energy consumption to achieve our goals to reduce greenhouse gas emission by 11% compared to FY23. We have achieved approximately 25% green energy component in our energy mix globally. We continue our journey on water positivity with water generation exceeding water consumption at our Pune campus. With that, I now invite Vijay Sinha, our Chief Operating Officer, to provide updates on business operations.
Thank you, Manish and Sachin. Greetings, everybody. Manish has provided insights about our business and Sachin has shared details about the key financial metrics. I will share details about our operational efficacy, service line performance, and capability enrichment initiatives. We are continuing our journey on operational excellence and making good progress on key imperatives like pyramid optimization, managing utilization in an optimal range, and calibrated usage of subcontractors while managing our on-site mix. Disciplined execution on these parameters enabled us to minimize the impact of wage increase on cost of delivery. Enhanced fulfillment rigor enabled us to minimize the impact of volatile demands due to macroeconomic situation. This rigor enabled us to improve our utilization by 60 basis points. This quarter, we saw a good growth in many of our service lines. On a quarter-on-quarter basis, in reported terms, our advanced engineering service line registered a growth of 7.8%. Experience services grew by 3.1%. Application services and enterprise application services grew by 0.2%, while foundation services remained flat. Data engineering and analytics saw a decline. Our key service lines continue to scale up well, making up to 34% of our total revenues. We are continuing to deliver value to clients via our experience engineering engagement continuum of service offerings. As part of this, we have developed multiple assets that can help our clients navigate the complex AI ecosystem. These assets help our clients identify the right set of use cases and technology solutions to achieve competitive differentiation. We are accelerating our talent transformation journey to increase the depth and breadth of subject matter expertise of our employees on emerging technologies as well as appropriate business domains. With that, I now hand it back to Manish.
Thanks, Ajay. There are signs of continued softness due to difficult macroeconomic environment impacting customer technology spend decisions. We are carefully watching the demand environment and continue to stay close to our clients so as to respond to their needs and accordingly adapt our investment plans. Over the last four quarters, our thrust on client centricity, execution excellence, and employee-centric policies have yielded positive results. Continued focus on execution of strategy through accelerated go-to-market partnerships and sales rigor with the goal of investing in long-term growth remains our top priority. With that, we can open the lines for questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. The first question is from the line of Mr. Nitin Padmanabhan from Investec. Over to you.
Yeah, hi, good evening, and thanks for the opportunity. So I had a couple of questions on the deal win. So I think on the face of it, the deal wins look strong at a 1.3 times book-to-bill. Normally, I would assume that this would lead to a strong Q4. But I think you made a few qualifications there saying there's a spillover and the renewals. So could you give some color there and assuming a strong Q4 with these deals flowing through into Q4 revenue, is that a wrong assumption? So just wanted your thoughts on how to think about this.
Hi, Nitin. Nitin, as I said, that $194.8 million order book which we reported has spillover from Q1. There are certain deals which got spilled over from Q1 to Q2. And there are a couple of deals which we were expecting to sign in Q3 got signed in Q2 itself. So normalized run rate could be very close to what we reported last quarter. It will be better than last quarter. Now, as far as Q4 is concerned, Nitin, I think it's too early for us to give you any flavor and, given the circumstances which we are dealing with. And as Manish specifically called out, the demand environment continues to be challenging. And I think we will be only able to comment on that as we move forward.
Right. So here's the challenge. So the broad thought process was that, you know, margins will improve and we have done extremely well on margins. And growth should be tail-ended. And at least on the face of it, looks like based on the deal wins that it could be. Now, what are the concerns that you have? Now, I did notice that high tech is down sharply and maybe Q3 is soft because of furloughs. So just wanted your thoughts to how to think about this. Do you think that these deal wins will not convert to revenue or there are possibilities of delayed convert to revenue?
No, I think the way we report orders booked, the real wins will convert, at the entire 194.8 million is going to convert to revenues. The question is that you are filling the bucket from one end, but we don't know what will be the leakage of revenues due to furloughs and due to lower number of working days and so on and so forth in the quarter.
Understood.
So you can be assured of, you can be assured that if you are showing 194.8, one, it's a very precise number, and two, we will get those numbers.
Fair enough. And lastly, before I cede the floor, what are the areas of worry from a vertical standpoint at this point in time? And when do you think high-tech can potentially bottom out?
I think if you look at our performance overall, except for high-tech as a vertical, we have done very well, actually. We have done well in Africa. We have done well in UK and Europe. We have done well in financial services. We have done well in consumer services. Our experience services business is growing. Horizontals, we are seeing growth pretty much everywhere. So except for high-tech as a vertical, the growth has been very, very promising across the board. But when will high-tech recover? I think that's a trillion-dollar question, not even a billion-dollar question, because as you know, today 70% of the capital spend in the US economy is on technology and technology-related products. And as we are seeing elevated interest rates and quantitative tightening, I personally feel that we will see, unless we see a dampening of interest rates and dampening of quantitative tightening, I don't think it will be easy for the high-tech industry, high-tech as a vertical, to turn around.
Oh, fair enough. That's very helpful. Thank you so much, Manish. Thank you, Sachin. All the best.
Thank you so much. A reminder to all the participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Sandeep Shah from Equirus Security.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Sir, just wanted to know, within the high-tech vertical, is it pain within one top client, or these are pain beyond top clients in some of the other top clients within high-tech? And the way I look at it is, these clients are a pain point for Zensar in terms of suppressing growth on a year-over-year basis. So we can have two solutions. One is to open more purchasing window in these accounts, or actually accelerate the growth in the other segments outside these accounts. So which part we are looking in terms of diversifying and minimizing this risk which suppress the growth of Zensar year after year? And then I have a follow-up which I will ask.
So one is, I am not as pessimistic about high-tech as you are. I think once we get our act together in this vertical, it will turn around. That's number one. Number two, as you've seen, we have added healthcare as we have identified healthcare and life sciences as a vertical, and which we are going to put special focus on. You can also new account opening before we also opened 8 new logos in this quarter. So there is a lot of action happening on the sales side, and actually that is reflecting in the order book of 194.8 million that Sachin talked about.
Okay. And just in terms of the rejuvenated go-to-market, accelerated sales growth aggression, Manish, is it fair to assume the roadmap in terms of quarterly TCV is on the up rather than remaining more or less at the same range of $150-$170 million on an adjusted basis?
I think, as I mentioned in the previous answer, it will depend on, you have seen the order book number. I think it will depend on what we see in terms of revenue leakage because of furloughs or specific client situations or anything. So it's just dependent on that. It's an act that we need to, it's a balancing act that we have to do every quarter. And as you know, this quarter is, or Q3, is a very, very tough quarter for the entire industry because of furloughs and lower number of working days.
Okay. And second, just Sachin, a question about first half normalized EBITDA margin. Even if I strip off the one-off in the second quarter, it looks like at 17.8%. And the wage hike is largely behind, and we are still maintaining a mid-teen kind of a guidance. So is it fair to assume the margin guidance is slightly more conservative, or do you see some unforeseen headwinds maybe related to furloughs in the coming quarters?
So Sandeep, furloughs is a very much known phenomenon for the industry and for us as well. So from that perspective, the guidance which we provided for the year actually bakes that in. Apart from that, as Manish said, we have now created room for creating investment in our capability building, in our sales and marketing department. So from that perspective, that investment will definitely have some dilution from the current levels.
Just to reiterate on PAT, I don't know how many of you noticed that in the first half of this year, we made more than the entire what we did in the entire last FY23. So at least that's something that we internally are very proud of.
No, sir. I think well accepted by the investor community as well. Congratulations and all the best. I may come up in the quarter from.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Mihir Manohar from Carnelian Asset Advisors.
When you mentioned the normalized is 17% versus the reported number of 18.6%. So what is the gap here which is there and what exactly is this?
So the gap is due to the one-time reversal of management bonuses for FY23, which the decision was taken during the current quarter, and reversal of that has come in the current quarter's P&L. As you all know, that FY23 was not a very good year for us as a company, and we have a very high performance-driven criteria on the basis of which management of the company gets its bonuses. Given the performance, we have seen the one-time positive impact of 160 basis points on the margin. So if you take that out, you know, the normalized margin would be close to 17%.
Sure, understood. Yeah, that's it from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. The next question is from NGN Puranik from Enam Asset Management. Thank you.
Hi, Manish. Great quarter in tough times.
Thank you, Mr. Puranik.
I have a question about, you talked about capability building and pyramid rationalization. And these are the best leverage available for an IT services company. So if you can elaborate on what all you are doing on the capability building, vertical, horizontal capability building.
Mr. Puranik, I'll request Vijay to address this question. He's been doing a tremendous job
in managing the pyramid and talent.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, hi. So on the capability building front, we have basically two dimensions. One is deepening the technology capabilities of our associates around the five service lines. That's associated with advanced engineering practices, which is nothing but cloud-native capabilities. We are also significantly increasing the capability of our associates around the experience services, as well as Oracle, SAP, Salesforce kind of a thing. Outside of that, we see strong market for AI and Gen AI. So as we speak, we have embarked on the journey of upskilling our people across the AI, Gen AI spectrum. So that is completely fully in force. And finally, given our growth potential, we see that we also need to like basically have our people sharpen their domain skills, because techno-functional skills are what is going to be the need of our to deliver value to our clients. So we are sharpening the domain skills as well. And of course, the other things associated with leadership training, project management training, and things like that. So we have a very structured capability enrichment program with individualized learning path for each of our associates, and that is beginning to yield results. Some more work to be done.
Mm-hmm. Can you summarize in terms of the capability building, which will, you know, you use it for client operations. So what are the key services you are building capability? Is it how big is the focus on analytics? You talked about customer experience and engagement and others, but in terms of analytics, how big is the focus? And
I think there's a huge amount of focus, Mr. Pradhanik, on experience services, which includes both the design, research, design, UI, and customer experience. We have a very compelling practice on data engineering and analytics already. And by the way, we have integrated the generative AI capability with our data engineering and analytics capabilities, because we believe that it is without data, there is no artificial intelligence. It can only be artificial dumbness. So we have combined the two, and we believe that all these newer service lines are going to be big growth areas for us, and we are actually seeing those in the results.
And how many projects you have done using analytics with generative AI?
Nobody has done any projects. And if they claim that they have done projects, it may be a single digit number. But we have done close to 100 proof of concepts for our clients.
Hmm.
And not every proof of concept translates into real projects. Because you know, the technology is still fairly nascent, no matter what people tell you, it is fairly nascent. It is not really ready for prime time on the enterprise, especially on the customer side.
So it can be both productive and predictive?
Yes.
From a productive, from a perspective of improving your own operations, and predictive in terms of building solution for the client.
Yes, and most of the use cases that we are seeing clients use it for is more on the productive side rather than predictive side, because you know, on your inside stuff you can afford a higher error rate than on the client facing stuff. So most of the use cases that we are doing POCs on with our clients and for ourselves actually are related more to productivity improvements rather than predictive capability.
Productivity. And so when you say you're building capability at a different level, so How do you leverage this? How do you using fixed price one option, because fixed price projects are very difficult to manage because they go wrong on estimation, either time, cost, effort, value, anywhere, or scope mainly. So, but when you have people who have better experience capability, can you take a bigger risk of doing fixed price projects where the margins can be greater?
Actually, there are two ways of using this this concept. One is, as we found out with a certain set of clients, that they didn't have the budget to do an all natural intelligence project. Mm-hmm. By introducing artificial intelligence and improving the productivity in a low risk fashion, we were able to reduce their overall spend by 50%.
Okay.
And then they had the budget to do the overall project. So that is one way of doing it. Fixed price, we are doing, we don't, see the technology is so new that we don't really want to take high risk fixed price projects. But proof of concepts, demos, etc., we are doing it on a fixed price basis and it's not very risky.
Hmm. So the high.
Sorry, Mr. Puranik, we'll have.
Yeah, yes, sir. Sir.
In the queue.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much. So the next question we have is from Mr. Pritesh Thakkar. You can talk to him.
So just had a question on the wage hike part for this part. You indicated on the SG&A part the impact was just 30 bits. So is there any incremental residual impact that we expect in Q3 as well?
Actually, Pritesh, your voice is not very clear, but I'm assuming that you are asking me that whether the one-timer will have any impact on Q3. If that's the question, then I have clearly called out that the currently reported margin.
So what I was asking on the SG&A, you mentioned that the impact on wage hike was 30 bits in this quarter.
Yes.
Yes. So are we expecting any residual impact for the next number? What is it?
No, nothing. Nothing apart from what I called out.
And on the client part, on the client buckets, what is driving growth for the beyond top 20 clients? Because it reported 9.5% Q2 growth, while the top 20 clients declined by 4.9%. Anything to read there?
What's the question there, Pritesh?
If you are using a mic or a speakerphone, can you please speak into the phone? Your voice has not been clear right from the beginning.
Yeah, is it audible now?
Slightly better.
Yeah. So I was asking on the client buckets, what is driving growth for the beyond top 20 clients? Because it reported 9.5% Q&Q growth, while your top 20 accounts declined by 4.9% Q&Q.
Pritesh, if you look at when Manish joined, at that point of time, he clearly called out that we are going to start a new organization within our sales team, which will focus on the net new business for the company. And for last two quarters, there has been a lot of hiring which is happening over there. And gradually, we definitely think that engine will start picking up and will help us grow outside top 20 clients for the company.
And you're already seeing it, Pritesh, that non-top 20 clients are growing faster. And this is primarily because of two things. One is net new logos, and the second is that in our smaller clients, we are doing much better on farming and hence trying to increase the numbers.
Okay, understood. On the Q3, quarter, I mean, since we have this furloughs and holidays coming in, do we expect the impact to be on a similar line to what we had last year, or you expect the growth to be a little severe given we have this macro headwinds coming in?
So Because normally we don't give forward-looking guidance on this subject, but what I can say is that it will be in line with last two, three quarters impact which you saw.
Two, three years
impact which you saw.
No, the reason why I'm asking is because we signed strong TCV this quarter, so I thought if there is any ramp-up coming in from there, and we should see a little bump up in Q3 vis-à-vis the last year quarters.
No, I think the furloughs are part of the industry and part of the numbers which we have been reporting over the years. We do feel that we will see the impact of furloughs for Q3. Along with that, if you see, the macro environment is also definitely not helping us. From that perspective, you can actually take the impact which you saw over last two, three years in Q3. On the similar lines, we are expecting given current situation.
Understood. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Mr. Sameer Dosani from ICICI Prudential AMC.
Thanks for the opportunity. Congrats on robust execution during the quarter in difficult times. On healthcare, if you can share some strategy, I'm sure you have formed a GTM strategy and leadership have inducted. So if you can share some strategy, high-level pointers of what is your thought process, and that will be helpful. The second part is on BFSI, right? So in times like these where tech spends from banks have been very struggling, actually, your growth has remained robust. So what are those parameters, or what are those things that you're doing differently? If you can just highlight what are the key differentiators there. Thanks.
So I think, first of all, on healthcare, we already on healthcare and life sciences, I'll reiterate, I think we have a good, without even calling it a vertical, we have had a good presence in life sciences and medtech overall and a couple of healthcare accounts. We believe that adding domain capabilities to this mix and offering a broader range of our services to the healthcare sector, healthcare and life sciences sector, will yield richer dividends than if it was hidden in the emerging area. So we will start by enhancing our domain capabilities in this area and marrying our offerings with the domain capabilities and take them to the market. That is broadly the incubation strategy, at least for the first two, three quarters. BFSI, we are doing quite well. I think two reasons. One is in BFSI, especially on the insurance side, we have specialized in certain packages, and we have both the technical depth and the domain capabilities to go deeper into these areas. And once we have entered with this, we have expanded using our other offerings. So that has worked well in overall BFSI for us.
Understood. Understood. And for healthcare, you would have already inducted leadership, etc. That process is behind us. That's how we should think of.
Yes. I think, again, as you know, I myself have a lot of experience in healthcare and life sciences, so I will incubate the leadership there. And yes, we have hired someone who brings the requisite talent from both a domain and sales perspective.
Understood. Understood. Thanks. Thanks for this. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sandeep Shah from Equirus Securities.
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up opportunity. Sachin, wanted to understand, there is a dramatic improvement in the offshore revenue mix over the last several quarters. Even in this quarter, there has been a higher improvement. So is it fair to say in the last few quarters, the volume growth is much higher than the reported US dollar revenue growth? And a follow-up question in terms of gross margin tailwind, utilization is higher. Offshore revenue mix is higher. So are we still foreseeing some further headroom spending in these two, three levers which can impact the gross margin? I do agree investment may impact the SG&A, not at the direct cost level much. And the third is, what is the reason for absolute decline in depreciation and amortization, and whether the 2Q level is a normalized level of depreciation and amortization? Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have lost the management connection. Please stay connected while we reconnect them. Thank you for patiently holding. We have the management team back on the call.
Yeah, am I audible now? Should I repeat the question?
Yeah, Sandeep, I have your question. Earlier, when we used to have product revenues as part of our portfolio, they used to get counted as part of on-site. Now, with our focused efforts on services revenue, as part of our revenue mix, has changed over last two quarters, and that is also what is getting reflected in the offshoring numbers which are getting reported.
Okay. And I had a follow-up which I asked earlier itself. It may not be audible to you. Is there a further headroom in the offshore revenue utilization rate increase going forward? And what is the reason for absolute decline in depreciation and amortization? Whether Q2 level would be sustained or there is one-off and it may increase from Q3?
So let me answer the first question, second question, then I will hand it over to Vijay to answer your first question. As far as depreciation is concerned, the acquisitions which we had done over the years, the amortization of that is impacting, the amortization has been coming down over last few quarters, and that is what is getting impacted. Going forward, we believe that we will be in this range, what we reported in Q2.
Yeah, to your question about offshore distribution as well as utilization, I think we are now seeing that the offshore ratio is at a fairly stable level for our optimal level. So we don't expect a significant movement from these levels. Utilization is also fairly optimal. It will be range bound depending upon the sensitivities associated with certain quarterly phenomena. Otherwise, I think we will operate in the current utilization range.
Okay. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you so much. The next question is from Devang Bhatt from IDBI Capital. Thank you.
Hi, sir. Thank you for taking my question. So, last time you had alluded that, you know, you will not target large deals till margins are stabilized. So, now that margins have reached comfortable levels, are you targeting any large deals and in which area are you seeing traction? Is there any large deals in the pipeline? And if yes, if you could elaborate the nature of that deal.
Actually, let me first start by defining what large deals are for a company of our size. And anything with 5 million ACV or 25 million TCV is what we consider as large deals. By that definition, we are working on a few deals. I cannot quantify the deals just now, but I can tell you that at least 4 or 5 deals we are working on. You know that the win rates on these large deals and the competitive intensity is very high. So we are not really projecting anything from these deals just yet. But to answer your question, yes, we are in the market for large deals. And I can also tell you that wherever we have gone in, we have been received well. You may not have won the deal, but we have been received very well.
So are we seeing cost efficiency kind of a deal or a digital transformation kind of a large deal?
We are not seeing digital transformation kind of large deal. That is for sure. We are seeing large deals more in the cost takeout space.
And sir, you had said that, you know, the company's growth 95% comes from farming. So in high tech, what are you doing to drive that growth in mining the clients in high tech?
Well, I think in high tech, we are trying to change our sales force. And enable them to be much more proactive, number one. Number two, we are trying to build higher level relationships with our clients, build great relationships. And number three is our messaging and our work in the experience to engineering to engagement continuum is resonating very, very well with our clients. I mean, you'll be surprised to know that in the high tech space, we actually work with some of the top clients in the industry.
Okay. And sir, just last question. The European region did very well, but which verticals drove that growth?
It was both banking and financial services and manufacturing and consumer services, MCS. Both of them did well for us.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. The next question is from the line of Chirag Shah from White Pan. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Shah, are you there?
Yeah, am I audible?
Yes, you are audible.
Yeah, so my first question. Yeah, thanks a lot for being. So my first question is, you mentioned in your opening remarks that data engineering and analytics have seen a decline. So can you indicate why it is and how do you look at it from next 12 to 18 months perspective?
So that's because data engineering and analytics was concentrated more in the high-tech vertical. And since the high-tech vertical declined, there was a corresponding effect on digital, on data and engineering and analytics vertical.
So it is more industry driven rather than application driven or line business driven. That is the right understanding, correct?
Yes.
Okay. The second question is on the margins front. So in your annual analyst meet also you indicated your aspiration is mid-teen margins and stability in margins in a particular band. Now, since two quarters you are there, if I do H1, you are almost there. And also your aspiration to reinvest in the business to build up capabilities may be at a slightly faster pace than what your peer set may be doing. So how should one look at margins from here on? Is there a case of reset on the higher side, or is there a case of to be slightly cautious, or these are normalized margins and as activity picks up, there could be significant uptick that one can see?
So we want to keep, as I said, that first of all, we want to bring predictability in our margins, create a trajectory in our margins. In last 4 to 5 quarters, for last 3 to 4 quarters, we have been able to work structurally towards that. Now, as you know, that though currently industry is growing through a tough time, but as the growth returns, we want to ensure that Zensar is ready to take advantage of that growth from the capability perspective as well as from the sales perspective. So we have already started investing in building up our sales force. That's the reason I specifically called out that on a quarter-on-quarter basis, normalized SG&A has remained flat. And we, with these kind of margins, we are creating headroom for us to further invest into business, into the areas in which we see it is needed to be invested. So from that perspective, I think our goal will be continue to be in the range of mid-teens margin. Anything over and above that, in some or other way, we want to invest back into the business and be ready for the growth when industry turns around.
So if I can rephrase or re-summarize, current margins that we have seen in H1 are kind of normalized margin unless for a negative shock that comes across in the business. That is the right way to look at it?
No, 18.6% is not mid-teens. It's almost adult.
No, I'm excluding that 150 bits and looking at H1, excluding that 150 bits of reversal because they actually potential last year, right?
These are the headrooms which we have created for ourselves, which we want to invest back. So normalized margin which we as management team is targeting is mid-teens, which is between 14 to 16%. Anything more over and above that will be reinvested in some or other form back into the business.
Okay. Thank you
very much. So ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, the next question is from the line of Nitin Padmanabhan from Investec.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Just a quick bookkeeping one. What is the proportion of net new in the total TCV this time?
On an overall basis, my EE is 2/3 of my book and 1/3 of my book is EN and NN. And my NN is in lower single digits right now, Nitin.
2.5 million.
Sure, perfect. That's all. Thank you so much.
2.5 million.
Thank you so much. So the next question is from the line of Dipesh from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just want to understand about the reinvestment and the margin trajectory. Typically right now, let's say we are at 17 adjusted EBITDA margin and 14 to 16 is the range what we indicated. Usually what time period it required for you to optimally operate within that 14 to 16% range, because investment will take some time. But considering next 2-3 quarters, so typically how long it will take for you to start operating within the targeted range?
See, if you look at our hiring process on the leadership is already on. As Manish clearly said that we have already onboarded our healthcare leader as well. And there are a couple of other hirings which are happening in the company. So from that perspective, the process is already going on. And we will see the impact of that in Q3 and Q4.
So broadly by year end, we should operate within the optimal range of 14 to 16, where focus would be on accelerating revenue growth. Is it right understanding?
See, apart from that, we also have to see, as one of your colleagues asked, you know, we will also need some investment in case we win any large deal or something like that, correct? And as you know, that large deals initially, at least for few quarters, are not a margin accretive deal. So if something comes our way, we want to ensure that, you know, we are ready for that.
And last question is about the client and client mining related thing. Let's say we have roughly around 47 odd clients giving more than 5 million kind of revenue. On top 20, we are seeing some weakness, and I think obviously we always maintain that client mining is the long-term kind of growth potential in those things. So just try to understand if you can give some sense in last 2-3 quarters, the new client which we added, the quality of those clients compared to, obviously we are seeing some challenges in top 20 and there might be some mixed change. So if you can provide some qualitative aspects in terms of the kind of client which we are adding.
So we are going after our target account list is companies greater than $2 billion in revenues. And mostly we are adding, the effort in adding clients is going towards those clients only. I mean, sometimes things, smaller clients come to us with a larger project, we are happy to take them. But our focus is always on companies with revenues greater than $2 billion. That's number one. Number two, I think if you look at the order book, I think the EN portion, existing new portion, is pretty strong over the last couple of quarters, which means that the farming engine is working. And farming engine is not only working, but it's working on cross sales, so to say. So those are the two data points that I would like to share.
Understand. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from the line of Jalaj from Swan Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I just one question, sir. This is with regards to the last communication which we had. So, sir, what would it take us to reach to quadrant one of the, in terms of the growth performance? Because that is what you had alluded to, that is our target. So, in during that process, what is lacking right now, or what sort of investments, or what is needed right now? And secondly, is the sales team supporting or the sales team right now in place, or there are some major changes still required there? Thank you.
Can you come off the speaker phone and then ask the question? Somehow there was a lot of echo from your line.
Sure. Is it better now?
Yeah, a little better. Go ahead.
Sorry. So this is first question is with regards to the last discussion in the analyst meet, which was around the our target to reach to a quadrant one in terms of the performance growth wise. So what would it take us to be there? That is what where we want to be there. So that's one thing. And secondly, is the sales and sales support team right now in place, or there is still some more headcount to be added there, or because I do see that there is a certain attrition there also. So these two questions. Thank you.
Yeah. So top quadrant remains our goal, and as I said, we will not reach that goal in one quarter or 1 year or so. I think we are targeting is that we'll move up a quadrant every year, so to say. Currently, we are in the bottom. That is number one. On the second thing is on sales. As far as headcount is concerned, I think we are there. As far as quality is concerned, you know, the jury is still out there. And we continue to look at sales performance at an individual level and counsel people who are not performing. And we'll continue to do that.
Thank you very much. As that was the last question for today, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Manish Tandon for closing comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for spending time this evening with us. We hope we answered all your questions. If there are more questions, we have a wonderful investor relations team. You can address your questions to them. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, sir. On behalf of Motilal Oswal Financial Services Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you, everybody.